Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
You live for planning the perfect trip. The thrill of comparing hotels, scoring that impossible reservation, and piecing together an unforgettable itinerary. You already think like a travel advisor, so why not just be one? Fora is a modern travel agency built for people who love to plan vacations and help others travel well. As a Fora advisor, you'll be set up for success with best-in-class training, powerful booking tools, and a vibrant global community of experts sharing real insider tips. Fora helps you turn your love of planning vacations into a business with a flexible, meaningful stream of income, with commission on every hotel, cruise, and activity you book. And with access to more than 7,000 preferred partners, you'll unlock VIP perks like upgrades, resort credits, and late checkout, giving you and your clients the kind of elevated travel experiences regular travelers simply don't get. Getting started is as easy as booking trips for people you already know. Become a Fora advisor today at foratravel.com/earn. That's foratravel.com/earn.
Sitting here watching the news. Shout out Audie Cornish. The Audie Cornish show on CNN. So, I ain't going to spend a lot of time talking about Donald Trump's punk ass today. But I just will say this. And this, I'm going to make a prediction. And we'll see if I end up being right or wrong. I smell an impeachment coming for war crimes. That's my prediction. I think they're gonna impeach Donald Trump for war crimes. It's for all this stuff he's doing. Because I feel like because he's already threatening other countries too. He's threatening Mexico, Colombia. Basically just bullying them. He's basically, when you cut through all the stuff, like, he's basically, you know what I mean, to avoid going around the block to get next door, he's basically bullying people and telling these other countries, do what the fuck I say or I'm gonna bomb the shit out of you. That's basically what they're saying, you know, like, if you don't do what we want, we're gonna be aggressive with you. That's my opinion. That's my personal opinion on it. And I got every right to that. Yeah, dudes, bitch ass said. Dude said, U.S. is in charge of Venezuela. That's what Trump said. That shit's crazy as hell. They just basically stole Venezuela. And then Marco Rubio was up there talking about, oh, we're not running it. We're just running the, you know, the policy stuff. Dude, it's the same difference. You're running their country. You just took it over. You just G'd their shit. Like, here, man, we're here. We're taking that damn oil. And we're going to run your country. And you're going to do what the fuck we say. Or we're going to fuck you up some more. That's basically what they're saying and doing. When you cut through all the conversations and all the, like, all of that, that's what they're doing. You know what I mean? And then the lady, like, the Venezuelan vice president, I think her name is Delcy Rodriguez. So she's, like, basically, like, at least by title, in control. But Trump and them are going to start, even if it's behind the scenes, they're going to start bullying her. The United Nations meets on military action in Venezuela today. And it's just crazy how Trump and them, they're just jumping right over Congress. Because they're supposed to, like, if nothing else, let them know ahead of time. They're either supposed to let them know or they're supposed to get approval. It's either one or both. I know that. And dudes, just because he's the president, he thinks that he should just be able to do whatever he wants. He doesn't care about, like, remember back when, this is the last thing I'm going to talk about, dude, today. Remember back when he was going through all his court shit and everything? He was all mad that he was being charged with things and all that shit. And he was saying how fucked up the court system is and all that. Now, he wants to use it to his advantage, though. To hurt other people. You know what I mean? That shit's crazy. Dude's such a bitch. Yeah, but I forgot what I was saying. It, man, like, dude, just I ain't gonna talk about him no more though today. It's just hard not to though. You know what I mean? Cause honestly, there'll be times where like I'll come on here and I'll be like wanting to talk about something else, or I mean, I, you know, end up talking about whatever it is I wanted to talk about. But like I'll be saying in my mind, like I ain't really talk about dude today, and then like. I'll wake up and he'll have been done or said some. And like sometimes, because like sometimes people will be like, not, I'm saying not, people don't say this to me, but I'm saying like I hear this out there and like it's kind of like a thing. You hear some people being like, well, why do people spend so much time like talking about Donald Trump and like, oh, this, you're wasting your time. No, you're not wasting your time. It'd be wrong, it'd be bogus of me and you. If you're a critical thinker and you care about the world and the society and your family and you care about what the fuck happens to you and other people, like, why wouldn't you want to know what's going on? Why wouldn't you want to spread that information and let people know how they're being fucked over? I don't have to know you personally to make you aware of something, or at least give you the information, like, hey, like, dude's about to do this, man, be on the lookout. You know what I mean? That's why we were so upset when that small percentage of black and brown people were voting for Trump. That's why we were so like, what are y'all doing, man? But they didn't care about racism. That's a conclusion I didn't come to. The black and brown people that supported dude's bitch ass, they didn't care about the racist comments he was making. They didn't care about all that. They didn't care about it enough. They were still willing to vote for dude because they liked what he was talking about economically, or they liked that he said he was going to kick brown people out the country, or because he talked down, you know, about disabled people and LGBTQ and gay people and all that, like, you know what I mean? So, because some people feel that same way, they attached to that shit because he was talking about people like that. And they know that, too. He knows that. That's one of the main reasons why they're doing all this bullshit. Mass deporting people. Just doing all the taking all this stuff from people. Taking people's jobs, firing people, taking SNAP, taking money back. Dude took money back that was supposed to go to fix the lead laterals here and all that shit. Joe Biden had allocated millions of dollars to help fix up some of the roads and all that kind of stuff. And like, I was like, forgot the exact name of it, but it was like North 6th Street. They were going to just fix a lot of stuff up, and some of the money was going to go to, you know, fix up the lead laterals and stuff to get the lead out the water and all that shit. And dude took that money back. You can go look it up. And you're taking the SNAP benefits. All that money they were saying that they saved with Doge. Why don't you guys use that money for stuff? You're claiming you saved it. And then here's the other thing. If you saved all, and you found all this fraud, and you saved all these millions of dollars, where are the people that are being criminally charged? Because if there's fraud, that means someone was being criminal, right? So then that means there should be charges. Because you guys would love nothing more than to put somebody out on Front Street and be like, here, look, we popped this person for this and this and this and this and that. Because they love doing that. Like showing off and shit. And like I said, there'd be people criminally charged, and they'd be bragging and boasting about it. It'd be all on the news and everything. Y'all know that. That's because there was none. They didn't find none of that shit. And if they did, it was so minimal, like it wasn't even worth reporting or mentioning. Because it's like, oh, no one's going to really care about that. You know what I mean? Yeah, but like I said the other day, basically, Trump's just basically, he's basically between laying people off, mass deporting people, bombing people, blowing people up out the water, stealing their country, kidnapping their president, whether he's a piece of shit or not. He's doing all of those things to brown people. Just look at it. Look at every situation that he's into it with, like whatever country is that he's into it, that he talks negative about, or that he's fucking over, or that he's in conflict with, or that he says negative shit about, or that, like, all that, right? The Gulf of Mexico thing, how he switched that to Gulf of America, all that. All these things that he's doing are to brown people. He won't go hard on Putin. And if you think about it, like the Russian-Ukraine stuff, that's basically Caucasian people killing each other. Those are like his people, like, you know, by skin color and all that. So he's not really, like, he'll go hard on Zelensky sometime. You know what I mean? And the worst he'll say about Putin is that he should stop killing people. Like, too many people are dying. That's the worst he'll say. But he won't talk shit about dude. Like, because in his mind, like, those are just two, it's almost like those are like their family members fighting each other. And they're like, you guys stop it. I wish you would stop it. But they're not going to do anything about it or condemn them for it. But he'll punish all the brown countries and talk about if they don't do this, I'ma do that. Just basically threatening people. Like I was saying the other day, like how can we claim as the United States to be the richest, bad, like in every area we claim that we're the most dominant, the most richest, the most powerful, all that shit. We're the envy of everyone, like all, we claim all of that, right? So then why are we stealing people's oil? Why are we taking people's SNAP benefits? Like for real. Like, we got all this power and money and influence and just all this shit. Then why do you need to do that stuff? Because you have hate in your heart. And you're doing it because you just don't like the people that need it. That's the only reason it could be. Because you don't need the money. You're talking about how you can pay for that ballroom bullshit you're doing. You're just tearing the White House apart. You claimed you could pay for that yourself and all this, and you're gonna pay and all this other shit, and you got people paying for it and all that other shit. But anyway, some other stuff I was gonna talk about on this episode. There are, I know, in the new year, there are, don't quote me, but we're gonna do some more digging, but I believe there's at least 19 states whose minimum wage is going to be going up in 2026. So we're going to delve into some of that information and look into see what states are going up and which ones aren't. And I know I haven't heard nothing about Wisconsin's minimum wage going up. I heard like small rumblings, like here and there, like some years ago, but it never went anywhere. You know what I mean? Like Robin Voss, he ain't trying to do nothing, dude. Such an asshole too. We're like just Wisconsin. We're like slow with everything. We're like the last to get stuff. We're like the even if you just take a look at the weed stuff. Whether you're for it or against it, it's like every state, I'm not sure about Indiana, But like, at least most or all the states around us have at least medical, if nothing else. We don't got shit.
What'd you say, baby?
So why don't we mind our business? Oh, look, and I'm not moving the arm.
The dead right arm and a dead right leg.
Right.
Yeah, we're just wondering why dude can't mind his own business. Basically, yeah, that part. Like, why the fuck? These Congress people, too, would be... They talk like they're literally scared of him. When they get asked a question...
It's like Stockholm Syndrome.
It's just like, damn, man, you ain't, like, why are you scared to say that you disagree with the bullshit he's doing? Like, don't you have any... just like pride in who you are as a person, you know what I mean? Like,
I'm scared.
Yeah, that shit is crazy.
This is the same Washington playbook that we are so sick and tired of, that doesn't serve the American people, but actually serves the big corporations, the banks, and the oil executives. And so my pushback here is on the Trump administration that campaigned on Make America Great Again, that we thought was putting America first. I want to see domestic policy be the priority.
Can you respond to that?
Sure. Well, I wanted to respond for long. Marjorie Taylor Greene's so uncommitted to her views. Today's her last day in Congress. She quit. But I would argue that keeping America safe and stopping the mass importation of drugs laced with fentanyl into our country, which is killing hundreds of thousands of Americans.
That's a lie right there, because most of that cocaine don't even come in from Venezuela. Only like a portion of it does. You know what I mean? Like, that's just a goddamn excuse. And then, like, what about the people that are doing the drugs?
No accountability for them.
Right, no accountability for them. They're the ones going to buy the shit and driving over there to get it and doing all that shit. Those are choices they're making. Shit. Ain't nobody telling them to buy it, just like didn't nobody tell me to commit the crimes I did. Like, I had to take accountability for what I did. I couldn't use that excuse. They weren't accepting no excuses. It was, you did this, and...
What about the health care?
I got this clip I'm gonna play right now from Minister Farrakhan. I know some people like him, some people don't. I'm kind of impartial, whatever. When he has something good to say, I listen to it. Like, I don't follow him or like, you know, anything like that. But I don't dislike him either. I don't really feel either way about him. But I'm gonna play this clip. This is from 2019. And he was already talking about how Trump was going to do this to old boy, to the Madero dude or whatever his name is. So he listened to this clip. This is from 6 years ago. Hold on, I'm going to get it ready. I got it bookmarked. Just give me a second, y'all. I think we've been podcasting long enough to be afforded the couple seconds it takes to get a bookmark together, baby, you think? I think so. Oh, Paul Newman was, I got a clip from, did you know Styles P did some ghostwriting for some rap? There, he was doing an interview and they were like talking about like artists and like, should they be respected? Like, if you don't write your own lyrics and shit, like, And Styles was saying basically, like, you basically, like, that's the start line right there of a great MC. Like, if you're not writing your own stuff, like, you can't, like, that has to be the start right there. You don't get no, you can't be considered a top MC if you're not even writing your own stuff.
Yeah.
And so, come to find out, he ghostwriter for Kanye. He done wrote some lyrics for Kanye. And some other rappers too. But like Styles don't, he don't write raps down. He thinks of the stuff in his head and then he just starts rhyming. But anyway, so let's go to this. This is I got this clip. Okay, here we go. So the Honorable Minister, I'm just reading the clip. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan warned the world in 2019 during Savior's Day that Donald Trump sought to invade Venezuela to seize its oil, overthrow President Nicolas Maduro, and impose U.S. dominance under the guise of, quote, freedom. So here we go.
That which is going to get more of them killed. Let me help you to see.
This is 5 minutes, y'all.
You can win. But you can't win being a thug. I know America's going to war. But it's a war, President Trump, that you can't win. I know you say you got a lot of juice, $750 billion you're giving to the army, but you're only giving them that which is going to get more of them killed. Let me help you to see. You can win, but you can't win being a thug. You're trying to take Maduro out of office and get control of the largest oil reserve in the world. What kind of president call somebody in the house of another, Guaido, and tells him, you can be the next president. But Maduro was voted in. You say, well, it wasn't a free and fair election. Do you remember Jimmy Carter? He'd been watching elections, over 104 of them. And he said, I'm quoting the former president, he said that the voting in Venezuela is some of the best that he has seen in 104 countries where he has looked at elections. Now, I don't know the truth, but I think Jimmy Carter has no reason to lie on Maduro. Right, right. But you see, when you're a hustler, when you're a thief, when you want to take the oil, remember how the president, when he was running, he said, let's take the oil in Iraq. Take it. Right, right. See, but your hands will get chopped off today. Because you're not the power that you think you are. There's a new sheriff in town. I'm not talking about me. I'm talking about the two that back me. Now look. I think, Mr. President, you would be wise to leave President Maduro alone.
What you think about that, baby?
That
was from 6 years ago.
Right, that's some foreshadowing, right?
Mm-hmm. Just like the song Computer Love.
Oh, yeah.
Which came out in like the mid to late 80s. When did they come out, like 86, 87 or whatever? They were talking about
something like that.
Before the internet was even out.
Right.
So that was crazy. Yeah.
Here's Paul Newman. Rest in peace, right? Didn't he pass? Let's see what he's talking about.
Nine, the Israeli. All right. The Korean airliner was shot down. There was a lot of hue and cry and moral outrage, and we got it in the United Nations and so forth. In 1978 or 79, the Israelis shot down a Libyan civilian aircraft because it had violated Israeli airspace. President Nixon sent a wire to Gaddafi and to Sadat as apologizing for this incident. There was no talk about it going into the United Nations. The International Pilots Associations had their meeting. There was 102 nations that voted to condemn Israel, and four that voted not to, and the American representative abstained. Why? Because we couldn't create an enemy there. But when the Soviets shoot down an airliner, the same situation, we rise in moral outrage against this act. What is the difference? Because it's insistent. We must insist that the Soviets have got to be created as an enemy. Otherwise, if they're not really a big enough enemy, how are we going to get appropriations for more arms? Now, and I'd like to get into the other area. I'm sorry if this is a speech and you don't like them, but people keep talking about national security and we got to be tough and we got to be strong. Okay, we're tough. And we're strong, and we've released all these missiles now, the intermediate range missile, the Pershing 2, and we're going to have more Tridents 2. And what was the Soviet response? The Soviet response is to put cruise missile into attack submarines and put more of them off our coast. Now, if someone's going to tell me that that increases our national security, well, I don't know. It's a whole ball game that I don't understand. All right.
That was 1983. He was on the Phil Donahue show. Who was president in 83? Reagan?
Oh.
Reagan. See, that's what I'm saying. It's nothing new under the sun. The Republicans, they love going to war, but they talk like they don't.
Reagan.
Yeah, Reagan. I call him Reagan. Yep. So here you have Paul Newman in 83 basically complaining about how we're bombing people and like bullying people around and all that, and we want to be tough and bad and shit, really for no reason. 83, same stuff.
The Korean airliner was shot down. There was a lot of hue and cry and moral outrage. And I'd like to get into the other area. I'm sorry if this is a speech and you don't like them, but people keep talking about national security and we got to be tough and we got to be strong. Okay, we're tough and we're strong, and we've released all these missiles now, the intermediate range missile, the Pershing 2, and we're going to have more Tridents 2. And what was the Soviet response? The Soviet response is to put cruise missile into attack submarines and put more of them off our coast. Now, if someone's going to tell me that that increases our national security, well, I don't know. It's a whole ball game that I don't understand.
I normally do straight.
All right, y'all. Oh, here's another interesting one. So this woman was, she was locked up for 32 years here in the United States. Her name is Mary Jones, and she was finally declared innocent at the age of 74. That's crazy. Her life is over at that point. It's just music. Maybe we'll do a story on that. That's fucked up, though. Last one right here. This is John Kasich. He was one of them Republican dudes, but at like least he was like, he would call out when they were doing wrong shit. At least he had a backbone.
Interest to our action in Venezuela, yeah. I learned as a congressman that when the U.S. takes military action, it must be in the direct interests of the United States. It's hard for me to connect that direct interest to our action in Venezuela. Yeah, Maduro was a very bad guy, and he ignored an election that would have removed him from power. But at the same time, does that justify the direct military intervention? The other troubling aspect is the issue of spheres of influence. If that's our sphere of influence and we can do what we want, other strong or great powers begin to think they can do what they want? Does China all of a sudden say that Taiwan is in their sphere of influence? Does Vladimir Putin say that's what justifies our invasion of Ukraine and perhaps his intentions to go to other countries? Now, look, I hope that this intervention will result in good things for the United States and good things for the world, but I am troubled by what the implications could be and what the long-term impact will be.
Dude's already, Trump's threatening in Mexico and then too in Colombia, mm-hmm. basically telling them do what I say or...
But, like, shouldn't we be working on our own problems?
Yep. Like that bitch promised.
Right.
And that's why I say, and that's what lets you know, like, that a lot of what he's doing is based in racism. Because look at everyone that he's into it with. Or that he's attacking or talking bad about or threatening or whatever. It's brown.
With the exception of Greenland.
Oh, yeah.
He's bullying them, too. But
although Venezuelan, a lot of, like, there's a lot of Caucasians in Venezuela, too. They're, like, considered Caucasian. But over there, there's a lot of mixed races.
Yeah.
I think, like, the Caucasian rate or whatever, as far as being classified, is, like, second.
Mm. I just...
Because I know everyone over there in Venezuela ain't considered brown. They're the slight majority over there. Because everyone's, like, mixed. You know, there's a lot of... From just, you know, throughout time and stuff.
It's just crazy.
And where you are, where Venezuela is, too, located at, you know what I mean? There's Mexico, isn't far, Honduras, so you have a lot of mixed, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot, like Latin and white mixing, stuff like that. But if you're Latin and white, in reality, you're brown.
Yeah.
White people want to try to classify it the other way around. But that ain't how it really works. Like, if you got somebody that's Mexican and white, I consider that person Mexican.
Yeah.
Like me, I would address them, oh, that's a Mexican. He or she, they're Mexican and white. That's how I would say it. Like, some people probably might have a problem with that. But same thing, if you're black and white, you're black.
You're
treated that way. All of that. You're just black. You're black and white. It's not you're white and black.
Ugh.
Yeah.
The world.
The world.
Ugh.
All right, y'all. We're going to finish getting ready. And we appreciate everyone listening.
LOX.
Why do you need a line, yeah? And what is your end game? couple niggas who some got him a pen game. Still end up in the pen. Yeah, fuck it, we insane. Dior bucket up in the Porsche, thin chain. Nice sweatsuit, my niggas some thin frames. All my niggas winning, of course, it's my end game. Ghost. Do you really want the best for me? Ghost. Are you happy when niggas testing me? You just trying to figure out my recipe. You will never get it, just bounce, nigga. Just prepping me, God. Fuck is you saying? Fuck is you saying, nigga? This life ain't a game, fuck is you playing, nigga? Everything you wouldn't be seeing, suckers are painted a picture. Broken betrayal, nothing that make you sick. And thank you for showing your colors. Don't be with family, but that ain't you. Go away, summer's just like the others. So ungrateful, he ain't give me shit. But when I was needed, I came through. Keep grinding, don't ever.
Here's an interesting story. So this is from the Corrections One webpage, if you want to go check it out. They got like stories about like what's going on in the prisons throughout the country. You can type in whatever state,
yeah,
and it'll just have like what's going on in the prisons and jails and stuff, and from the good to the bad, just like all kinds of stuff. So this one is says Colorado prisons projected to run out of beds for men by 2026. Budget analysis says staff shortages, parole bottlenecks, and limited capacity will stress DOC beyond limits by 2026. This article was updated December 29, 2025. And this is by Shelley Bradbury from the Denver Post. So Colorado's prisons will run out of beds for men in the next fiscal year unless significant changes are made to either reduce the prison population or increase capacity, a state analysis projects in a new report. A sharp decrease in parole releases coupled with a steady stream of new prisoners entering custody means the state's prison population is like, well, I'll stop right there. We talk about that all the time. A sharp decrease in parole releases coupled with a steady stream of new prisoners entering custody. When we were saying that, mm-hmm. How when there's only a handful of prisons, inmates being released, but there's more going to prison every day. Because if you think about it, they're, like here in Wisconsin, people only get released from prison one day. It's one day out the week. Whereas for like the mandatory release, when your time is up, mm-hmm. it's one day that they do that. It used to be on a Tuesday. I don't know if they switched it or whatever. That was MR day. Because like no matter, like let's say your mandatory release date fell like on a Thursday, you would get out that Tuesday before that. Because it's always a release you that Tuesday. Mm-hmm. That's just how they do it. Like, you know what I mean? But if you're discharged and like if you're in there and you end up doing your entire sentence in prison, let me take that back. Yeah, it's always on a Tuesday. But if you're under old law, because it's truth and sentencing here in Wisconsin, so it means like a judge says 10, you do 10. So you get released on that Tuesday before, though, right? And then those couple few extra days is going to your parole. But, like, if you're doing old law, because there are people still seeing parole board that got committed crimes before 1999, because that's when truth and sentencing kicked in. So there's still people in the max joint seeing parole. You know what I mean? So, like, if someone like that, let's say they end up discharging in the joint. They end up doing all their time in there. Because there's people that got, like we were talking about earlier, that have sex crimes. Mm-hmm. Like, they'll have, like, their mandatory release is discretionary. Like, they can be kept in there until they're discharged. Okay. So when they get released, or just someone like that, whoever's doing their full sentence, you'll get released on whatever day of the week it falls. You know what I mean? If you're doing discharge in there, I mean like your entire sentence under the old law, you'll get released on whatever day of the week it falls on. It doesn't matter if it's Tuesday because you're discharging. You know what I mean?
So, like, if your discharge date falls on a Thursday, you could release on a Thursday. If it's Sunday, you could release on Sunday. But anyway, so they only have the one day allocated for mandatory releases, right, in prisons. So we have, like, over 30-some prisons here in Wisconsin from minimum to max. So just keep in mind. And there's only a handful of people getting released from each prison.
Right.
So let's say, because I know, too, I know, like, because that's, like, a big day when, like, people are getting released and stuff. You know, and they're, like, at RCI, for example, there was about maybe 10 units. So let's say MR Tuesday came up. There might only be about 3 or 4 people from each unit going home. So that you might only have about maybe 20 to 30 people being released from that joint that day. Mm. But how many people are being sent to prison and are coming into prison?
Yeah.
Because there's being people sentenced to prison every single day. There's over 70 county jails in this state. So someone, don't just think about Milwaukee. In every county, in, you know, every county jail, because there's a court attached to it, so they're going back and forth to court, is someone being sentenced to prison from all these county jails throughout the state, and they're all going to Dodge. That's where everyone goes first. So just think, on like today, you're gonna have in the high hundreds of people getting sentenced to prison today, going to prison, but you're only gonna have, let's say you got 10 people from each prison getting released, let's say next Tuesday, and there's 30 prisons. That's only, what, about 300 people?
Yeah.
Being released?
Yeah.
Every week, only once a week, you got about 300 people being released from the prisons. But every day,
there's hundreds going.
Because people get sentenced to prison every day.
Right.
Monday, Tuesday, right. Wednesday, even on the weekends now.
Yeah.
But people only being released one day a week. So just, if you just do that math, it don't, you got more coming in than you got coming out.
Yeah.
And then you add on top of that how there's barely any programs, early release programs for people to get out. Then you add on top of that people getting sent back to the joint for breaking the rules, not laws, like all of that. And that makes everything overcrowded.
Right.
So that's what they're saying. A sharp decrease in parole releases coupled with a steady stream of new prisoners entering custody means the state prison's population is likely to see one of its biggest annual jumps in the last 15 years during 2026-2027 fiscal year, which begins in July, the analyst found. Quote, things are looking extremely difficult, to put it mildly, Justin Brack, or Bracky Brakey, staff analysis for the General Assembly's Joint Budget Committee told lawmakers Friday. There are challenges on the increasing population front in prison, and there are challenges on the release side. See, he's saying what I was just saying, which shapes this entire situation up to being something that is not looking great. Quote, to be very blunt, it's not good. I can't stress that enough. The Colorado Department of Corrections can house about 15,077 men across state and privately run prisons. The male population averaged about 15,006 people in November, but the population of male prisoners is expected to swell to 16,200 in the 2026 fiscal year and to 16,600 in the fiscal year after that. The number of women prisoners is expected to decline slightly. The state has about 900 male prison beds that are currently unused, largely due to inadequate staffing, and those beds could be brought back online with boosted funding and staffing. But even if the prison system reopens those beds, a big if, experts noted, Colorado will still be 230 to 440 beds short in the coming years, according to the 159-page report Brakey presented to the Budget Committee Friday. Alondra Gonzalez, a spokeswoman for the Department of Corrections, declined an interview but said in a statement that the prison system was, quote, closely monitoring recent data, which indicates that the male prison population is growing at a higher rate than previously forecast.
The CDOC works to balance population fluctuations driven by court sentencing and the parole process, which is independent of CDOC and therefore is not a tool the department can use to slow population growth, she said in a statement. Our primary mission is to fulfill our statutory obligation to provide a safe and secure environment for all individuals remanded to our custody, and budget requests will emphasize that obligation. The Department of Corrections is seeking a $58 million budget increase for the coming fiscal year, which is about a 5% increase to its current $1.2 billion budget, according to the report. That $58 million would include $8.2 million to open up some 550 new prison beds, most at the Sterling Correctional Facility and the Buena Vista Correctional Complex. Both prisons have long struggled to hire enough staff to run at full capacity, the report noted. It's a very complicated landscape right now, and just talking about, oh, we need to add more beds, it just feels delusional that we could even do that, said Christy Donner, executive director of the Colorado Criminal Justice Reform Coalition. The good news is we don't have to. There are plenty of other things we could be doing. And it's not big sentencing reform, not throwing open the prison doors, just common sense, efficiency-focused, outcome-focused improvements. Why are there more prisoners? The surge in prisoners can be largely attributed to a year-over-year drop in discretionary parole releases, along with an uptick in parole revocations. The parole board approved 1,284 prisoners for discretionary parole between June and October 2024, compared to just 1,030 prisoners in that five-month period in 2025, a 20% drop. Discretionary parole happens when an inmate is released before their mandatory parole date. Both discretionary and mandatory parolees are supervised by the Department of Corrections after their release. Parolees can be sent back to prison for violating the rules of their parole or for committing new crimes. Such revocations have increased over the last 2 years, with about 41% of parolees returning to prison for a rule violation or committing a new crime in October 2025, compared to about 31% in October 2023. The state's parole population in November was at its lowest number since 2011. The prison system also lost about 1,000 male beds over the last 5 years, including through the 2020 closing of the Cheyenne Mountain Reentry Center in Colorado Springs, a private prison with 710 beds. Releasing more prisoners to parole, halfway houses, or intensive supervision could alleviate the pressure within prisons, the report found, but also raises safety concerns. Parolees have in recent years been accused in a number of high-profile crimes, including the 2023 killing of a parole officer and the random fatal stabbings of two people in Denver. The parole population is at a historical low, and the number of parole officers has also declined. It's not clear at this time that the department has the people, practices, and funding it needs to safely supervise a larger parole population. Together with other systemic factors, including Colorado voters' approval of Proposition 128, which increases the amount of time some prisoners must serve before they are eligible for parole, the uptick in revocations and the decrease in parole releases has moved up the projection for when Colorado's prisons will overflow from a few years out to a few months. You don't have a couple years. You'll have to make those decisions in this session, unfortunately. Colorado's prisons in August triggered a legislatively mandated process aimed at speeding up prisoners' releases after the prison system's vacancy rate stayed below 3% for 30 consecutive days. On its current trajectory, the vacancy rate for men will sink to 0.4% by July 2026. That would push more prisoners into local jails while they wait for a space to open up in a state prison, a practice that a coalition of sheriffs spoke out against this summer, and likely cost the state several $1 million in payments to the jails, according to the report. State Senator Judy Amabile, I might be butchering that name, a Boulder Democrat who serves on the Joint Budget Committee, said the prison projections are dire, but that the system can take action now to increase releases and lessen the population pressure. Part of what is so frustrating is that there are a bunch of things they could be doing and should be doing to get people out, she said, and they're not doing those things. She pointed to bottlenecks with special needs parole, that is, parole for people with terminal or debilitating illnesses, as well as for prisoners who need to complete sex offender treatment before they're eligible to be released. I want them to release people who are not dangerous, she said, adding she'd also like to see more prisoners released to community corrections, more commonly known as halfway houses. The report noted that the number of people accepted in community corrections would have to increase to levels not seen in well over a decade in order to keep the prison system's vacancy rate above 2%. Donner, the director of the Criminal Justice Reform Coalition, said administrative and bureaucratic inefficiencies within the prison system also slow down releases and keep people in prison longer than is necessary. Changes to those processes, particularly around creating parole plans for inmates, could also alleviate the prison population pressure. Colorado already houses about 3,000 men in two private prisons run by CoreCivic in Bent and Crowley counties, and could not house all of its prisoners without the added capacity from the two private prisons. The Department of Corrections is seeking $14.5 million to pay for private prison beds at a higher per diem rate in the next fiscal year, according to the report. The department currently pays $66.52 per person per day at the private prisons. Officials want to raise that rate to $80 to keep up with rising costs. Spending the $14.5 million to house the 3,000 prisoners would be cheaper than expanding the state's capacity, the report noted. So there's a missing high school coach wanted for grim crimes, raises awareness of unrelated unsolved murder. The resources dedicated to an ongoing investigation surrounding missing high school football coach Travis Turner have been questioned, with one family feeling they could have instead been used to solve an unrelated murder from 10 years ago. On November 20th, Turner mysteriously disappeared from his rural home in Appalachia, Virginia, moments before Virginia State Police arrived at his door to speak with him regarding accusations related to inappropriate crimes concerning children. Days later, Turner was subsequently declared a wanted man and charged with 5 counts of possession of inappropriate child content and 5 counts of using a computer to solicit a minor. Turner mysteriously left behind key personal items before his disappearance. The search for Turner in Weiss County, Virginia, has unsettled other cases. One is the murder of Janina Jefferson, and her family fears authorities' interest in Turner's case will lead hers to continue to falter. Back in 2016, Jefferson was shot and killed in the parking lot of the Appalachia Water Treatment Plant in Weiss County as she arrived for the start of her evening shift. Ever since that fateful day, deputies with the Weiss County Sheriff's Office and U.S. Marshals have been hunting for Jefferson's alleged killer, Eric Jones. Jefferson's ex-husband, Jones, was last seen at a gas station on the day of the murder, reportedly buying a 6-pack of beer and driving off in Jefferson's stolen truck. Speaking to the U.S. Sun, Jefferson's niece, Brooke, believes the coverage surrounding Turner has left her and her family concerned that her aunt's murder will be overlooked. It's been almost 10 years, and whenever it first happened, I feel like it got out there and word was being spread, Brooks said. And then shortly after, it was maybe like a couple months after, it just kind of was forgotten about. It wasn't really getting shared anymore. And then when this Travis Turner stuff turned up, it was like blew up within days. And it was everywhere and it was all over my Facebook. And that did upset us because we felt like all those new resources that we're seeing, they were using on the Travis Turner case. We felt like they could really benefit from those with my aunt's case, considering Eric is still out there. We feel like it's kind of been swept under the rug and it's been so long. Wise County Sheriff Grant Kilgore has since insisted that Jefferson's case remains a high priority in his office. Still, the Turner case is perhaps more pressing given its recent nature. The former Union High School football coach vanished with a gun and without key items. The search for the head coach has focused on the expansive area of woods and rivers near his home, with authorities turning to drones, canine units, and a helicopter to scour the area. According to police, Turner was last seen wearing a gray sweatshirt, sweatpants, and glasses. U.S. Marshals recently announced that there's a reward up to $5,000 for information leading to Turner's arrest as they, along with the Virginia State Police and the FBI, searched the area. Experts have theorized how officers compiled evidence against the missing coach. So the headline is misleading because it seems like the headline made it seem like the coach was involved in a murder. But it's just that, like, this murder suspect unrelated to the coach with his nefarious activity, the family just doesn't want the search for their aunt's killer to go to the wayside because they're looking for this Coach Diddler.
Coach Diddler?
Coach Diddler. A Diddler coach.
So they're looking for him.
Yeah, but he left, like, without personal items and a gun. So he went into the woods and probably shot himself.
So they just probably have to find his body.
Basically.
That's more than likely what happened.
He did not leave with his, you know, like, wallet, keys, you know, stuff like that. He just left with a gun.
Oh, that meant, yeah, he was probably going to harm himself. Or maybe,
well, yeah.
Or maybe someone else.
Yeah, because they have, like, their solicitation, like, he was trying to meet up with a minor.
Oh.
He had stuff on his computer related to children.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So, people like that, like, once they get busted, they often just kill themselves. That's how I read it.
They take themselves out.
Yeah, because they know they don't want to go to jail.
See, that's what I was telling you, like, the appetite not to go to jail is real. That's why so many people flee.
Especially if you're...
high-speed chases. You got your own parole.
Especially if you're a diddler.
That, too.
You know it's going to be bad for you.
And it's going to be all on TV, too.
Yeah.
Sexual predator so-and-so.
Yeah.
Was
beloved,
for,
beloved coach.
You know, right.
Yeah.
Oh,
right.
You're supposed to be coaching just sports and you're...
And like mentoring children, not diddling with them.
Exactly.
Freak.
That's some Steely Dan in the background, y'all. We're just sharing a cigarette. We're about to go run to the store. Some groceries. And whatever else we need to do, we're just going to get it out the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then come back home and chill. I'm going to turn that up. I'm going to let that play for a minute.